This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 277, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 277. My name is and always will be Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello, Ron.
And Josh Flanagan.
I could change my name.
You could, but
yeah. I could see it.
So we are from the website ifanboy.com, which is a website all dedicated to comic books and comic book culture, and we've got a wonderful comic book community there that likes to read comics. We like to read comics. Every Wednesday we go to the comic book store, we get a big stack of comics, then one of us finds the one book that we feel was the one deeming the title pick of the week, writes a review of it over at ifanboy.com, then we come back here to the podcast to talk about it, as well as all the other books that came out and some other various topics of interest related to the comic book minutia world. Before we get to the show, we want to warn you and remind you that we're going to talk about what happens in the books. So we're going to spoil them if you haven't read them yet. So if you haven't read your comics, press pause, come back, listen to the show later on, and then it will be a lot more enriching for you. Or live dangerously and roll the dice and see what happens. And maybe you'll find out that the Human Torch died. So,
what yeah. the?
So this week, Josh had the pick.
I did.
Josh got that money this week. Got the Hickman money.
Yeah, I got the Hickman.
The check cleared, eh?
Yeah, $16.86. That's the going rate to buy me off this week.
It's a lunch.
It's some places. You know what? You guys convinced me in a way. I was in the shop, and I hadn't been buying Fantastic Four. I bought the first couple of issues of Hickman's run, and it was fine, but I didn't really feel the need to keep buying it. And you guys, I mean, if for those of who aren't, I don't know if you've been paying attention or not, but 587 was two issues ago, and Ron picked that, and then 588 was the last regular issue, and Connor picked that, and this would be 589 if it wasn't sort of rebranded with the FF number one again.
Is this a first in iFanboy history? Like a three in a row?
I don't know.
No, it's definitely not. All three Batman and Robins were pick of the weeks. Definitely two of them. Yeah.
The difference is
first time all three of us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So concurrent, all three of us. That has to be the first time that that's happened.
Interesting.
Yes. Yes.
So I saw it on the shelf and it literally it grabbed my eye. I bought the Stan Goldberg cover, which is he's sort of a classic artist, not one of these new modern artists. And the sort of combination of the white and the yellow, I saw it and I picked it up and I flipped through it and I thought, oh, what the heck? Because, you know, I had listened to the interview that you guys did with Hickman in Emerald City or in Seattle. And I call it the Emerald City. We're heading up to the Emerald City for some rock shows. I really enjoyed it. I sort of read it in the middle of everything. And after it was all done, I was like, yeah, I think I enjoyed that FF issue the most. And it was for a number of things in it. You know, right off, Steve Epting is really one heck of an artist, and he's a guy who's in sort of a second act of his career. He's been around a long, long time, and you know, a huge, huge, great success on Captain America. And it's so good to see him just sort of doing really well on another title here that it just fits really well with. Great, great acting throughout the whole thing. All these different characters he's got to do, and he just got that mood of you know, there's the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about and the sadness and everything. And I really enjoyed that. And I thought also for having – I haven't read anything before this. I was instantly up to date but not in a way that I felt like I was overly expositioned to. They just really laid out what was going on completely, and I think it's an interesting status quo that's happening. And Spider-Man being there doesn't feel hacky and shoehorned in. And it was a really satisfying read. I thought it was a great comic book.
Yeah, I thought they handled the you could pick this up if you haven't read any Fantastic Four and you have a vague notion of who they are, you could pick this up and I think in the first two pages they just explain what's happening. Like somebody died, they're moving on. That's all you need to know. I love the fact that the Spider-Man conversation didn't happen in the book; it happened off camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he just shows up and Sue's welcoming him and it's his first day on the job, you know, we're going to ignore the fact that he's also an Avenger and he's also works for Horizon and he's it's all the,
you know, that's fine. That's accepted. That's how this world works. Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not going
to
make jokes about it, but I don't really care.
Yeah. Yeah. But I thought they handled that really, really well. Epting, I'm not as sold on Epting as you are. I think some of it was a little flat.
For some reason that fits with me with this title. I don't know why. I know what you're saying, and that totally has merit to it. But I thought that he's, you know, starting out with the AIM guys, and I was like, why are these so? Oh, because these are the same guys who were in, you know, Captain America.
Yeah.
So that was actually really cool, and I don't know.
I think he's perfect for the book. I really do.
Yeah.
I've been saying the whole time he has that grounded style that highlights or complements the up in the air, you know, crazy science writing that happens. Plus, it's very, in this particular story, it's very foreboding. It's very, very emotional style. Everything's sort of very dark, and that works for this story. Everybody's kind of upset, and it works. I think he's great. I think this book really took off when he joined the book.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it when it was Eaglesham, and I didn't really enjoy it when it was...
The other guy was no good.
But I thought for me, as a book, this really took off when when Upton came on. And I think in general we could talk about the fact that we joke that Hickman's had like a third of the picks this year.
Yeah.
But I think we haven't seen this kind of pairing of book and writer probably since Grant Morrison on Batman. I mean, someone who's just so instantly perfect for the subject matter.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why he keeps getting these picks, because it is everything is working.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He's in that zone, and this story is working.
It's important. Like, I didn't come into this with – I don't have a lot of emotional connection to the Fantastic Four. They're not, like, favorite characters or anything like that. I'm not a big fan of anything in this specifically that was like, oh, it hit my spot. It was just lots of really good little things adding up to one sort of overall good book. That scene at the table where they're all sitting there, it starts off and Peter tries to sit in Johnny's seat and they're like, you can't sit there, you know?
Well, and that was great. And we call that out in the panels, in the weekend panels on iFanboy.com. But even at the later scene when, you know, Reed is saying, you know, I think we should terraform the moon, and his father, who's now returned, calls him out on it. And I thought that was great, because like you felt the tension of that, like that one panel of everyone looking at him for speaking up. And
you can hear that fork drop.
Yeah, exactly. And then Reed's just, you know, how refreshing, you know, like it was great. And like even early in the issue, when in the very beginning, where after Reed was watching Johnny's kind of farewell video, and then he looks like outside the window and the kids, you know, taking down the four symbol, putting up the Future Foundation symbol, and just like, so this is tomorrow. Like he's nailed, like with very few words, economy of words, Hickman can really get across the emotion or the sentiment of the moment. And it's really, really good. And I think he's underrated in that. He often gets the big idea and the big, like, very wordy, and oh god, you need a dictionary to read Hickman, but he's done the economy thing really well. And even like when Franklin's playing the video game and Reed's telling him how he can win, you know, and Franklin's like, yeah, but where's the fun in that, you know? Like, it was I really enjoy those little touches. So,
and I also I really, everybody's like, everybody wants you to take a stand on a uniforms one way or another.
Yeah,
I like the uniforms a lot, but even more than that, I like the logo. When I sort of realized the point that like each of them has a different little white circle as opposed to black circle, I was like, that's cool. Yeah. It's just a neat little idea.
And
in there.
I love that it's a updated Unstable Molecules.
Yeah.
Great.
Which is good, because the dry cleaning bills alone.
Yeah, exactly. We've gotten away from the Unstable Molecules. There was a time in the Marvel Universe where everyone's costume was Unstable Molecules. Even the X-Men were Unstable Molecules. It was everybody.
They've been replaced by nanites.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's Unstable Molecules.
That's the Fantastic Four makes their money, is they provide all the costumes.
The patents, yeah, exactly. So how did you like the cliffhanger at the end?
I don't. The only thing I didn't know about is if that referred to something else. But he called him Uncle Doom, so I thought that was interesting.
Well, there's been a deal between Valerian and Doom in the past, so they're
okay. Yeah.
They need to work together for something.
Wade's run, Valerian and Doom had a lot of interaction. So
I liked how it was set up. I liked that she's a little kid talking, and the dad's like, maybe you shouldn't, but he knows she's a super genius too, so he's kind of got to trust her. And you know, I know what Dr. Doom means, the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And I love the little diagram at the end explaining who everybody was, all the kids.
That was
you
cool.
Know, yeah. That helped. That helped me a lot, actually. Yeah. And I liked the way it was done. And it's just a sort of an overall, like, what a really fun issue. And when it was over, like I really wanted to read more. I wanted to know what was going to happen next. And a lot happened in a small amount of time, and I was just it was just very impressive. And it's funny, because I've seen several people say this one was pretty good, but the last two were really good. And it's like, it doesn't really matter, you know. Like, this one was good on its own.
Yeah, this was great. It was really good. I don't know if it's pick of the week, but it was really, really good. Yeah.
He's really on fire right now, and you know,
I think that's clear.
Yeah.
Now, interesting counterpoint is, I guess it's not a counterpoint, but Batman Incorporated #4. Which just came out 2 weeks ago, I think, right? Two weeks ago,
I feel like it just did.
With that hack on the pencils, right? I'm kidding. I was so happy to see so many people raving about Chris Burnham.
Yeah, Chris Burnham's the new artist on this book. He's going to be filling in when Yannick Paquette can't do it. And in the last issue, we left off the cliffhanger where Batman and it was Gaucho, right? Right, that's the character's name. We're locked in a sort of death trap, and there's these drowning orphans. And in this issue, we deal with that, but we also... There's another storyline with Batwoman investigating the murder of these Marines who have been shot in Morse code, in the bullet holes, you know, are Morse code, and it turns out there's a connection to Kathy Kane, who was the first original Batwoman in the Silver Age.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Morrison brings the Silver Age in full bore in this issue.
Well, I mean, let's talk about a. What an incredibly bold choice this is to do in a book that's this big. And B, no, I think that nobody else, absolutely zero people, could have done this story besides Grant Morrison and gotten away with it.
Yep. So we find Batwoman and Kathy Kane are intertwined because the new Batwoman is obviously the updated Kathy Kane. And so in the flashbacks, we learn about Kathy Kane's life, the original Kathy Kane's life and her history. And it's pure Silver Age storytelling. Even the art, even Burnham's art, which in the present day stories has kind of a quietly vibe. It's very sort of dirty and a lot of lines. In the Silver Age style, it goes to like a Dick Sprang kind of influence to it.
How cool!
Everyone's got these big chins, but the storytelling is that way too. I mean, Batman meets Kathy Kane, they fall in love, even though she's 10 years older than him, and they're making out in the Batcave all the time.
They go back to the tango.
Yes,
they explain why he knew the tango, and that when she flips her cape up and it says, "This is Tango del Morte," I was like, "That is the greatest looking panel."
I don't know, but there were so many. I was cackling with delight during this issue because I knew how many people this would piss off, because Morrison is an unabashed fan of the Silver Age, and he's always said he was one of the people that invented Hyper Time, which says that all comics are in continuity. And so he basically puts all the flashbacks are Silver Age style and art and characterization. So it was a trip. I mean, Kathy Kane, the old Batwoman, carried a purse, and her costume was yellow. So I mean, it doesn't fit in all the gritty modern realistic take on things, but
it does now.
Yes. So
Burnham
was great in this issue, too.
You know what this felt like? This felt like Strange Tales, but real. Yep. I mean, like, it's in continuity, it's in canon. I was like, that's bold. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah, it really was.
Burnham's a great choice to fill in. His art style really works in this book.
Man, you're not kidding. No, I thought he really stepped up, too. Like, he did a great job with it. Hulk gets barbecue.
Hulk just gets better and better with every issue. I mean, seriously, like, I don't know what deal with the devil Jeff Parker's made or whatever, but like, there's something about everything about the Red Hulk is just like, it's fantastic. Like, Gabe Hardman is killing it. Betty Breitweiser's colors are amazing. Like, it's just like everything. Like, I finished this comic and I was sad it was over.
You know, they introduced a new sort of villain who's just sort of one of those classic sort of comic book villains who's not at all interesting in comparison to the sort of the sort of nouveau General Ross that is going after Red Hulk and why he can't tell him who he is. And
yeah, well, I actually find myself not really liking 14, like for whatever his name is, for Shane, whatever his name is. Like, I didn't like like 30.1, Hulk 30.1. I was kind of annoyed because I like the status quo that they set up of him, you know, living with the LMDs and working for Steve Rogers. But now I realize after this issue is that, like, it's basically turnabout is fair play. Like, he's now Banner and he's on the run and what was great is, like, he's screaming at the, you know, no matter how much he screams, nobody can hear and believe him that he's actually Ross. And it's so simple, it's almost genius, you know?
Yeah, and the fact that he can't turn back to Ross now because of the nanites in his brain, again, the nanites. But, like, Parker set up a lot of different fingers in directions here that all work really well together.
Yeah.
I loved the idea of the rock villains.
Yeah.
They drop these bombs on the ground. They turn into – they sort of terraform around and create – giant monsters. Jeff Parker's on a giant monster kick, by the way.
Yeah, he is.
And, nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. And then the last page, we get this sort of cliffhanger that this giant creature is coming towards Earth, and the Watchers are watching it, and they're all concerned. I mean, he's. I think you can tell he's having a great time writing this book.
And not only having a great time, but, like, doing a great job on it. Yeah,
absolutely.
So,
you know what page I want to buy?
What?
The one where Hulk is sitting on the back of a pickup truck.
Eating ribs.
But the pickup, like, he's actually drinking like a big thing of iced tea, but like the truck is weighed down.
Yep.
Like the wheels are up in the wheel wells and you know, the LMD's eating a sandwich. Like, what a great little sequence. That was really
the whole funny. The whole barbecue thing was hysterical. It was
I just want some food.
Yeah, I mean,
I have money.
I mean, Parker can do the humor really well as the serious action stuff, and that's a nice little mix. It was, you know.
Gabriel Hartman is
so good
on another planet right now.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And there was a little different in the last issue, the .1 issue, and for example, Breitweiser didn't do the colors, and I think you could tell the difference.
Yeah,
it's very subtle. I mean, the colors.
Well, he was also inked. He had an inker on that too. Yeah. So where he inks himself on this issue. So, but yeah.
It was, and it wasn't, but it was like, this is this team that is on this is perfect.
Solid, yeah, totally solid.
Now, Ron, I was at the comic store and I got my books off my pull list, and I was standing in front of the shelves. I picked up Captain America and Batroc. I was basically seeing if I wanted to pick up anything I hadn't planned on it. So I picked up Captain America and Batroc, the Leaper.
And you didn't regret that choice, did you?
No, I didn't.
It was awesome.
And then I'm looking at the Green Lantern books.
Yep.
And I dropped the book 3 months ago.
Right.
Even though Hal Jordan's one of my favorite characters.
Yep.
But they're like pulsating on the shelf going, yep, pick me up. What if I'm good? Because this is part one and part two of the Green, yep, Lantern War, Green Lantern Corps. And I thought, well, I dropped the book. I wasn't enjoying it. But what if it's good?
And was it good?
No.
You know, it's funny you say that, because actually for the first time in a while, I didn't get Green Lantern Corps, but I got Green Lantern 64. And I was like, oh, that wasn't as convoluted as the previous issues. It wasn't as confusing.
I thought it was just more of the same.
It definitely is more of the same. But like, again, it was the same. It's almost the same problem that we had at Blackest Night, where there was just this long, drawn out, slow burn, and it takes forever to finally get to some action. And this issue finally got to some action, and that's what it was enjoyable. I got to say though, I can't stand the entities.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I should amend my statement. It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't bad. It's not what I'm looking for in Green Lantern anymore.
Right, yeah.
And it was all the entities, and it was all of the Green Lanterns, and it was all the colored lanterns, and it was all of them.
The Guardians and all the shit. Yeah, yeah.
And I just want simple. I want simple now from Green Lantern. I don't want – there was literally a million characters in this book.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally may be wrong, but yeah, it was a lot of characters. And you could see, well-constructed, it probably was a nice payoff, but I just don't – this is not what I'm looking for in Green Lantern at the moment. So I was like, oh, well, at least – but now I know – I don't have that lingering worry that maybe War of the Lanterns is good. But
yeah, I know. But like, for me, the last page when all the Guardians are corrupted by the entities, and now they're different. Like, I can't keep track of who's who in it. You know, like, it's like, I know who Hal is, I know who Atrocitus and Sinestro and yada yada, all them. But like, it was, and of course, you know, Hal's got to go against the Guardians, and the Guardians and Green Lanterns to go get Hal. Like, it's a lot of the same tropes that we've read over and over again. Yep. But that said,
the only thing I really liked about it was they returned the yellow weakness to the Green Lantern ring.
Yeah, which is cool.
Parallax reinfected.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah.
Parallax reinfected the battery, so now they have if that'll last beyond the war, we don't know. But
yeah,
for right now anyway, there's the yellow impurity.
That's a heck of a challenge for a modern writer to have to deal with, because it's so goofy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So well, that's awesome.
There's supposedly a reason for it, but so now.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I don't mean that. I don't mean the reason for it, but it's like, well, what does yellow mean? You know, right. When I was reading New Frontier, like, he went after something that was like orange. I was like, well, is that okay? It's kind of orange. It's kind of yellow, you know.
And Ron, there's yellow and orange. Where's the line drawn? Now,
that's
Ron,
what I mean.
maybe because I read also Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah.
Even more convoluted. It was a lot of. It was literally the cover was Kyle versus Jon Stewart, and in the issue they both get corrupted by this force that's out there. They fight each other, and at the end they stop fighting. And it was just kind of like there was no point. And I feel like that's been Green Lantern's problem since the end of Blackest Night. There's been no real point to
right.
the story.
Yep. Which I'm with we'll you, see. And I hate the Guardians now. I went from liking the Guardians to hating the Guardians. So
yeah. Well, yeah. I think they all get killed in this issue, or the Green Lantern Corps issue. Gantha's hand blew up. He's got my hand, bloody stump in the Green Lantern Corps issue. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm still going to sit this out. So now I know I don't have to worry. I don't have a lingering doubt.
That's good.
But I'm assuming, Ron, that you enjoyed Astonishing Spider-Man and Wolverine as much as I did.
Probably more. The only negative against this is just how long it takes for issue to come out.
But man, when this is a trade.
No, when this is a trade, and the fact that you open it up and you've got and I see the word Mojo, and I just went, oh yes. And the fact that this was honestly, the art was really good. I mean, maybe that's what's taking so long, but I thought the art was really, really strong by Kubert. And when it ends with Dark Phoenix Wolverine, I'm sold. That's all it needs.
We talk a lot about how Marvel doesn't seem to have those out of continuity stories that are in trade that you can buy and give to somebody. I think this is going to be one of those books.
Yeah, totally.
It's a ton of fun. It's action packed. It's really funny. It's really sharply written.
Yep.
Jason Aaron shows off his action chops. He's really funny in this series.
Yeah, he's hysterical. He's writing Spider-Man great. And when they went to the planet and they found all the diamonds, and Wolverine's like, quick, put them on. And so he's put them on his claws. And so they come back in Spider-Man. He's bedazzled his costume. So he's got the diamonds around his eyes and everything.
And the soles of his shoes. Because they were time diamonds. And when you use them, you can affect time. It's wacky. It's funny. It's totally not something that quote unquote matters. It's just really smart, good, entertaining comics featuring Wolverine and Spider-Man who play off each other really well.
Yep.
And I love the I love when the villain kept showing up from different time frames.
Oh, that was great! Yeah, he's like, wait, he's gonna cut off your. Oh, I'm too late. It was like, this is great. It's fantastic, and I'm kind of sad that it's almost over. You know, so
yeah.
I'm actually waiting for this to come to graphically. That's what I decided.
Well, either however you can get it, I recommend this entirely. Unless it falls on its face in the last issue. One more issue left.
One more issue.
But I'm definitely at the point where I'm kind of jealous I didn't start at the beginning.
Yeah, it's a bit of a.
But
there's an automatic buy at this point. He has to.
Yeah, no, he's another guy. You know, him and Hickman.
Aaron has been doing great. He's been doing great. And hopefully one day it will appear on Graphically, which is the awesome digital comic service that iFanboy is a part of, the digital comics family of Graphically. Graphically's got over 2,000 comics that you can download and read. They've got some great applications for the iPhone, for the iPad, for Android. A great web application so you can read your comics on the web. Great publishers like Marvel, Archaea, Boom, Top Cow, Archie, and tons more are being added every day. We see behind the scenes, we see what's coming down the pipe, and there are just thousands of comics waiting for you online for you to read to get your digital comics fix in place. If you have an Android phone, it's the only place as of right now that you can get Marvel comics on the Android phone. So you can get your Spider-Man and Wolverine fix someday on Android from Marvel. But it's a lot of cool stuff coming from Graphically this year, so definitely join now. Become a user on graphically.com, and you can sign up there to check out comics on the web, sync them to all your applications. It definitely takes care of all your needs for digital comics. So go to graphically.com, enjoy it, help us out in the process, and give us feedback. Tell us what you think of all the apps. Write on Twitter or at Graphically and follow them to keep track of what's going on. But definitely very cool.
Awesome. The Viltrumite War is all over in Invincible number 78, and they're back to Earth. They made a sort of Faustian deal, and now Mark has to fly around and sort of put his life back together. And it's one of those calm after the storm ones, but like he's dealing with all the crap that he's kicked up during the whole thing.
Now he was gone for 11 months.
Yeah.
And so did she get fat?
Well, she was pregnant before that.
So is that it? Or
Adam Eve, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, Adam Eve,
I'm not sure. And I have to believe that it was vaguely done on purpose.
Right, like I'm specifically talking about the when he goes to visit her and you just see like her hair and her elbow, and then you turn the page and she's sitting in that chair and I was like, oh, she got fat. But
she doesn't look pregnant.
But she doesn't look pregnant. Yeah,
here's what I think. She can manipulate herself.
Yeah.
So maybe she couldn't get rid of the mask, but she changed it so she didn't look pregnant.
Maybe, yeah. Like, and then if you go further in the page when they're laying down on the bed, like she looks pretty chunky. But then they're all like when they're hugging on the next page, she looked normal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
I mean, like I look at it like this the soap opera sort of aspect of it, and I don't know what's going
to
happen.
Well, there's some
next.
Sort of secret because she's talking to his roommate. And he's like, did you tell him? And she's like, I don't know how. So we don't know.
It's
got
to be pregnant. It's got to be.
Or had the baby.
Again,
it was 11 babies. You know, maybe
if
she
had 11 months, she would have had it unless it's not his baby.
Exactly.
Oh, I don't even know. That's the thing. I don't know and I'm fine with it. But it was like one of those things like everything's all right now, but it's really not.
It's got to be not his baby. It's got to be Norman Osborn's baby.
Oh, no.
Speaking of, Ultimate Spider-Man 156. I love Chris Samnee. I love David LaFuente. I love Sarah Pacelli. I love Stuart Immonen. But it just felt right to have Bagley drawing.
Didn't it?
Yes.
I wasn't really looking forward to it. And I'm like halfway through it. And I wasn't even thinking about it. I was like, oh, right. This is Bagley again. No wonder it all feels so right.
It did feel right. But I was just, I got that step backward feeling. And that's only because I was so pro LaFuente and so pro, like, I love this, the last 2 years of the art on this book. So I'm kind of like, I don't want to go back to this. But yeah, but that's not discounting how good it was. Like, it was really good. It was probably, compared to the stuff that Bagley did at DC, this blew that out of the water.
Oh yeah,
totally. This is where he needs to be. And no, and you're not wrong. I mean, like, personally, I like LaFuente a lot, but Pacelli blew me away. I was like, this girl's amazing. And of course, there was a Somni issue last time. It's really cool with this book, though, that they've actually hopped around to a bunch of different artists, and I don't feel like it's disjointed at all. You know what I mean?
No, like it's very much a world, and it feels like it.
Yeah.
To the point where, I mean, this pretty much heavily crosses over with the Ultimate Avengers or whatever.
Yeah, like what's going on at the end of the book with the on the bridge is happening in the Death of Spider-Man Ultimate Avengers versus Avengers story or whatever is going on there. Yeah. So
I like the dilemma he's set up where Norman Osborn's back. He breaks out the Sinister Six who were on the cover of the last issue,
yep.
And you would think, okay, the Avengers are going to stop him. No, because the Avengers have to deal with other problems. That leaves no one to save Spider-Man.
Yep.
So he's going to have to deal with all these Sinister Six trying to kill him on his own. And the books, the story is called Death of Spider-Man.
Right. I totally did that, by the way, when they broke out of the Triskelion and the one two-page spread. I counted. I'm like, 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm like, six, it's six.
Yeah, I did too.
But
I
they counted. Never referred to it as the Sinister Six, but I knew, yeah.
Also, no, sure.
Also, I had to go back and count.
One thing I just noticed at the very last page, bottom right panel, that's a very La Fuente head.
Yeah, it's very round.
Yeah, like it's nice to see. Like it's nice to see Bagley. You know, whether he's doing it subconsciously or not, but you know, keeping the visual language that's been going. You know,
Bagley upped his game. I think his art was much stronger. And I've always been a Bagley fan, but you can. There's a level he's above.
Yes. Inked by Lanning too.
Nice. And Lanning's a fantastic inker.
He's a great inker. Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah. No. It's just another really fun issue, and as we know, Peter's life has to fall apart.
Yeah, well, we'll deal with that one. We'll cross that bridge when it comes to it.
So. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Uh-oh.
Oh, dear Lord.
Speaking of getting back on track, Captain America 615.1. We knew it had to happen eventually, but now we've got the groundwork laid for Steve to return to.
Yeah, this if we ever doubted the fact that Steve Rogers is going to go back to Captain America, this issue is officially the first. This is, starts the ball rolling.
Yes, you Captain Steve already.
Yeah. Again, why isn't Mitch Breitweiser the main artist on the book? So I loved every page of this. It was great.
His style works. It's very much in the Epting style, yeah. Which is what I think. Really, Steve Epting has defined the sort of look and feel of the book for many years, and this is very much in that style. So the return to it really worked.
Yep.
But yeah, in this issue, we Winter Soldier or Bucky is off in Russia. We don't know because that hasn't happened yet. Dealing with his criminal charges, so. The AIM is up to no good, so Steve has to take care of them because there's another Cap on the scene who wants to fill the void.
Subvertly trained by Nick Fury.
Yes. So Steve shows up, saves his ass, and starts to realize maybe he needs to be Cap again. And at the end, we realize Nick Fury set the whole thing up to get Steve back in the suit because he doesn't want to just tell him. He's got to make Steve realize he needs to get there. So yep. It was, no one could doubt this is where it was heading, especially with the movie coming out. So it's nice to see it's finally going to get there. Because I miss Steve and I miss Winter Soldier.
Yeah, but once again, 615.1, I'm not reading Captain America. Let me pick it up and know what's going on. 616 is going to be Winter Soldier in Russia, and it's going to be what the fuck. Like, I don't – the point ones, I mean, they're great little one-shots, but I don't believe that they're – this is the jumping on point that they promised.
They should have just made them extra issues in the month.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
Now, Batman, Streets of Gotham 21, I believe this is the final issue of the series. They should really publicize that at the end. Be like, hey, thanks for reading, or something like that. Because you really, I mean, it says the end, but they always say the end.
They want to be able to put out 22 someday, should market forces drastically change.
Sure. So in this issue, Paul Dini wraps it up. He wraps up the Hush storyline, which really this book has been called, it should have been called Hush for about 2 years.
He loved Hush.
So he
did. Like, Hush was the villain in his detective run, too. Yeah. Yep.
You said it like Ron Burgundy. You were like, he loved Hush. He loves it.
So the main point to take away from this issue is that he solves the problem, which is Hush has Bruce Wayne's face. So in this issue, the villain Jane Doe, who is a woman without a face, who cuts people's faces off and wears them as a mask, she cut off his face and wore it as a mask. So now Hush has no face, and he's back to wearing the bandages. Underneath the bandages, he's got no skin. So that's the main thing. We've solved that problem, and now the slate is clean. There are no two Bruce Waynes running around. And I think when Dini was writing this title, it was a great title. It's just he didn't always write it, which was the problem. Yeah. But a lot of fun.
So there are no more two Bruce Waynes. That's basically
just two Batman.
Thank God.
We've solved one problem.
I was worried about that. One step at a time.
So. And finally, the update to the infestation report is Ghostbusters Infestation 2 came out. And
this is where the Transformers rolled in, right?
No, God damn it, it wasn't. But the vampire chick who's in all the issues was there, and she stole a bit of Gozer's essence, which is kind of cool, which means Gozer's essence is going to be involved in the final part of the story, which is kind of cool. Otherwise, I thought the highlight was the zombie Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Mm-hmm. And other than that, I thought it was a little bit overly written, this issue. There's a lot of science in a lot of big balloons.
I kind of lost interest.
Yeah.
Like halfway through it, I was kind of like, yeah, flip. Like, art was fantastic. I was really into the art.
A lot of balloons full of science jargon, which probably would have been funny spoken, but reading was very sort of tedious.
Yeah, I just started to sort of coast at the end. I was like, skim, nice art, skim, zombie, yep, okay, and we're good.
Yeah.
The vampire lady, she didn't fit. I don't know. Like, she didn't fit in with the characters for whatever reason. I don't know. I didn't buy it.
Well, yeah, because it's very much a humorous book. So you drop in a vampire from, you know, from this other dimension. It's kind of off-putting. Although I like the fact that it's kind of jokey, because that fits in with the Ghostbusters are. But this storyline, and I understand there's licensing concerns, but this storyline would have been so much better had they all been brought together somehow and we would have had team-ups. So this will be a disappointment, but I'm sticking with it to see what happens.
Nobody from G.I. Joe would have been left over to do it.
Just one person from each. You take one of the G.I. Joe, one of the Transformers, one, you know, Peter Venkman, and you get somebody. You get.
You would have slept with the Baroness.
How awesome would that have been?
That really would have been. Now that I've said it out loud,
think about how that didn't happen. And then you have Captain Kirk and Peter Venkman teaming up.
That'd be great.
Would have been the best thing ever. They could have teamed up on
that. Missed opportunity. Licensing be damned.
I heard that.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Someone did.
Anyway, so those are the books that came out this week. You can go to ifanboy.com/comics, see the rest of them. A whole other stack of books came out as well, and thankfully the users of ifanboy.com wrote some reviews, and we want to highlight some of them. The first one coming from Wally the Green Monster, who reviewed Uncanny X-Force number 6, gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. At the time of this recording, nobody made it their pick of the week yet, but it doesn't take away from how good it was. Wally the Green Monster says, "The art in this book continues to deliver. The pencils are great, but what I'm drawn to is the color. It's the most unusual color palette I've seen in a long time. Neon pastels that don't make logical sense but look so nice. As a professional graphic designer, I'm really appreciating and learning a few things from Matt Wilson's color theory that graced the pages each issue. The lettering is also really nice. Has an old-school hand-drawn vibe that does its job without drawing too much attention to itself." And I echo, Matt Wilson is an up-and-coming colorist. We've been saying that for years now, I feel like. A year or two now, but he's great.
Was he known before he did Jamie's book?
He stepped in on Suburban Glamour. I feel like that was like his one of his earliest works. I'm sure he worked before that, but it's really been in the last like year and a half or so where he's been doing more stuff at Marvel and really coming to his own. So.
Well, this is where I'm going to sound like a lame-o, but like I don't think I've ever seen a colorist sort of rise that quickly to do that many books like for a major. You know what I mean? Like all of a sudden, I see every time I'm reading a book lately. I'm like, oh, this is really good looking. Then I look, and a lot of times it's Matthew Wilson, which is really cool.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
You remember how you used to look for Laura Martin's name in a book in the early 90s? Now, early 2000s, now you look for Matthew Wilson's name.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Him and Dave Stewart.
And Dave Stewart. And that's, I mean, they're some of the best guys working. But now, Josh, you didn't buy this.
Because
you just read the first three, and you said you loved it. You couldn't talk about how much you loved it in the first three.
Yeah. I didn't. I really did love the first three, but I'm really upset that Jerome Pena isn't on them. And
the thing is that if you Esad Ribic is a percentage away, like a decimal percentage away.
Yeah, so, no, he's fine. You know what?
It's wait for a couple issues when Mark Brooks come on board, when it's going to be a real stylistic shift.
No, a Tan.
Yeah, or no Tan. Yeah, Billy Tan comes on board. Yeah,
but. Yeah, and I, you know what, I wish that I could just get a 3-issue one for $5 every once in a while. Yeah. Like I thought that read really well. I was like, this is cool. I wish I could get regular books like this.
There's one great moment, which there's a couple of great moments in this issue, but Esad Ribic really nailed it when Phantom X and Deathlok are on the run. And the Eva lands and Phantom X thinks it's the rest of X-Force, but it's all Deathlok X-Force. And Connor, did you get this issue? Or
yep, I did. Yep.
In the lower left hand corner, they're being chased and they're running, and Phantom X eyes are bulging because he's like, these aren't my friends, and his eyes are completely bulging. He's just shooting behind him,
like
it had that moment of chaos, which was great. And then
shooting blindly behind him.
Yeah, exactly. And then X Force finally shows up, and Wolverine calls Phantom X LePew. Or something like that, which is just great. Like, it is. And really, really, yeah. He goes, "What's the story, LePew?"
It's a really fun book. It does lose us a little bit when Opaint's not drawing it, but other than that, it makes up for it
Really chilling. You know, they capture the Captain America Deathlok, and they find out what the hell's going on, and just like really, it's one of those things where it's like you're getting filled in as to exactly what's going on. It's really kind of fucked up, and then Captain America shoots himself in the head to put himself out of his misery, like hardcore. Like Remender's getting hardcore with this book, and I love it. So
it's good. It's like really good. It's the same sort of brain part that Fear Agent came from, I feel.
Yes,
like.
Yeah, totally. So,
and that's awesome.
Yep.
Is that awesome? Damn it.
Optimus Pyro wrote, which is awesome in itself, wrote into Transformers Heart of Darkness You gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 1 out of 5. Uh-oh.
Wah, wah.
And at the time of recording, nobody made this pick of the week, shockingly. And Optimus Pyro says, the art in this issue is horrible. Designs and proportions are inconsistent from panel to panel. The story half-heartedly undoes previously established work from earlier IDW G1 stories. What happened, IDW? The strong creative direction that you had 5 years ago was amazing. Please find it in you to bring it back. Until then, I'm dropping Heart of Darkness.
5 years ago? That long?
Yeah.
I think they've been going on for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought this was interesting because this guy's clearly a Transformers super fan.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know,
or
real
he
into
hates
it.
Them because he's Optimus Pyro.
Well, the first part of the review that isn't in here, he stated that he owned all Transformers comics, complete run from Marvel and everything.
And that is a big deal to drop the book.
Yeah. Well, but he had previously been into this, but had been losing
interest.
That's
what I mean. And so, if it's that bad where he's dropping the book after owning every single Transformers comic, then
that's pretty bad.
That's
rough.
A big deal.
Yeah.
I just can't get into those robots.
That is akin to Uncanny getting relaunched at number one and Ron dropping it.
Yep.
Yeah. It's too bad that that's going to happen.
Stop. 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 Stop.
Oh, that's so good.
It's going to be a bad day.
Stop.
If you read your books and you want to take part, we always like to see good reviews. So you can go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can pull your books. Then you can go in and rate all of them. And you can write reviews on the ones that you have strong feelings about. Or you can just be like, yeah, it's okay.
Speaking of good reviews.
Yeah.
Well, it's Book of the Month time.
It was.
A little bit late this month because of con season. I apologize. I know everyone is waiting with bated breath to find out what the March Book of the Month was. And it was Orcstain Volume 1.
Woo! By James Stokoe.
It's not a new book, but it's new to me. James Stokoe does the writing, the art, the coloring, the lettering, the binding, the delivering.
It's a recent book. It's not like it's an old book. I mean, the trade came out a couple weeks ago.
I think
yeah,
it came out early in the year or late in last year.
Early in the year, I think it was. Yeah.
There's no mandate when the book can come out to be Book of the Month. Washington
exactly.
The month next month if we want.
Says the rule bearer.
So says I've got the rule book right here.
You do. I know. We know you do. The union.
Yeah.
Rules.
No, we don't. Yeah. We don't mess with the rules.
So Orcstain, if you don't know, if you haven't read the review, is a book by, as I said, one person, James Stokoe. And everyone knows what orcs are now. I mean, it's a household word. Yeah. Even my family knows what an orc is from the Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah. Manflesh.
Those were goblins, weren't they? Or
no, they were Uruk-hai.
Didn't the goblins say manflesh?
No,
there were goblins. They were different than the orcs. And then Uruk-hai were specially bred orc.
Right.
Yeah.
I think they had a little goblin.
No, the manflesh was one of the Uruk-hai. It wasn't a goblin.
No,
it was in Two Towers, and they stopped.
Right.
They stopped, and he sniffed, and he was manflesh.
Right, right, right. Manflesh.
Manflesh.
Yeah. Or in this case, Grunch, which we're going to talk about in a second.
There's so much not to get away from Orcstain, but there's so much unintentional comedy in those Lord of the Rings movies.
The more you watch them, the more it's apparent.
Exactly. Hey, go on.
I'm sure that'll come out in a bit. This is going to be an interesting discussion because Orcstain is very sort of chaotic, and there isn't a lot of story. Josh, did you get to read this? Because I lent you my trade.
I did. I'm staring at it. I'm looking at it. I have it right here, and it's one of those I've been meaning to read it for a long time. But
okay. Well, the story isn't very in depth. Basically,
yeah, I don't feel like you're going to ruin it for me.
No, it's a society of orcs. The orcs are very warlike, so no one stays in power for very long. They're constantly coups. You know, regimes fall as a new regime comes up, and that regime falls. So basically, they're constantly at war with each other. But one orc has managed to unite one faction, and he's moving against the other orcs. He's basically moving up the map. If this was Risk or something, he's moving up.
Yep.
But there's a prophecy from one of his seers that says the orc with one eye will be his downfall, and then we meet the orc with one eye, who's a thief in the north part. I think Josh has my book, so I'm doing this from memory. He's in the north part, I think, or he's in the south part. It's one of the two. And it's basically meeting the characters and then putting them on their journey. This seems like it's going to be a long story. So we don't have a lot of conflict in this book. What we have is a lot of introduction to who these people are in the world, which is teeming with imagination.
Yep.
I think that's the most important or impressive thing about the book and why it was in the Book of the Month was there's so much interesting and innovative or interesting ideas happening in this book, though, just from the way they communicate, the orcs with each other, through the crazily detailed Jeff Darrow-esque drawings that are on every page from this one guy doing all this stuff.
Stokoe's insane. Like, he's insane. It's awesome.
And the fact that they're all obsessed with Grunches. Ron, do you want to tell everyone what a Grunch is?
I don't even know if I can.
It's a orc cock. It is.
There's a lot of cock in this book.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's currency almost. It's like a scalp in the Old West. They collect grunches after war battles. They have them on their spears. I mean, it's basically you can't go more than a page and a half without someone mentioning grunch.
A lot of cock.
It's a very grunch obsessed society. It became funnier and funnier as the book went on. I was like, they love grunch.
Now now I'm reading this in issues. Did the trade have all the backup material?
I don't believe it did.
Oh shit! Okay, because there was some great backup material in the issues with like how to cut a grunch and like it was like it was like a cutaway to the diagram of it. It was great.
Like the main character One Eye, he's a thief. He was off to steal some stuff out of a bear safe, which is a giant bear with a safe in his stomach. I mean, it's just crazy stuff that's not explained. You just have to accept that it's reality.
Well, what I like is that
it doesn't go wrong. And the crime boss, instead of starting to kill him, threatens to cut off his grunch, and then there's the whole thing about cutting off grunches, and it's a whole science to it. And
what I like about this is that he took a couple of concepts. You know, orcs, goblins, sword and sorcery, fantasy kind of world that we all now, it's all in the zeitgeist. We all understand. We get it. And then took it and made it crazy.
Yes.
That's what was awesome.
These aren't the orcs you'll recognize from Lord of the Rings. They aren't huge hulking creatures. They're kind of sinewy. They're kind of very skinny and small and scrappy. I mean, they're different kinds of orcs or different regions. But for the most part, the orcs in this are kind of – they look more like the goblins did in the film than the orcs did. They're kind of small and musty, very thin muscles and not big Hulk-like creatures. But it's just – I couldn't – every page was like you just marvel over the art and you marvel over the ideas. And that – and when the fact that it's one guy doing the entire book from pencils to colors to inks to letters is just amazing. I don't know what the monthly schedule is like, but I don't think it matters when you've got that much insane detail going on. But – Orkstein is one of those books you just sort of discover, and it's funny, it's exciting, it's innovative, it's unlike everything else out there. Plus, it's action-packed and violent, and there's lots of fighting and interesting battles going on. It's not just about grunches. I mean, let's not think that we're all grunch obsessed here.
a little bit,
but it's everything about this book was lots of fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I think it hits on a couple of different notes. It hits on the fantasy aspect and the story aspect and the insanity. It hits on the comedy aspect, but then it also like it from an art standpoint. No book on the market looks like this book.
No,
like Stoko is one of the most innovative, original artists out there, and dude's awesome. I mean, the dude's so awesome he's not allowed in the country. So that's how awesome he is. So like, think about that. So. Yeah.
What did Richard Taylor have to do with this?
Surprisingly, nothing. So
I can't even take part in this.
Yeah,
no, it's just there's a couple of double page spreads that are just so incredibly. And if you look at this book next to a lot of modern day books where the artist is so busy he can't do backgrounds,
it's kind
of makes it look everyone else look lazy by comparison.
And honestly, this book has come out regularly on time from issue standpoint. Like it hasn't been one of those like an issue comes out every couple of months. Like it's been very regular, and this trade came out, and it's a great way to pick it up. I mean, it's one of the, I think it's one of the. I don't want to say underrated because I definitely think it's highly rated, but it's definitely under the radar books
that read it. It's highly rated, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the under the radar books at Image Comics right now. And if you're looking for something different, Orkstein is totally something that'll just blow your mind.
If you're a Lord of the Rings fan, if you enjoy that kind of thing, even if you're not a big fan of it, but enjoy that kind of aesthetic.
Yeah.
It's a bit goofy. It's not a goofy book, but it's a bit goofier than Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Certainly a comedy element to it. There's also, I mean, they're introducing a bit of a romance, maybe. And there's actually a lot of political intrigue with the fact that this guy's the leader, but he knows he might get overthrown. So there's his whole staff, and he knows he's got this enemy out there, but he doesn't know who it is. It's just there's a lot of balls in the air, and it all works.
Yep.
So, a lot of grunch in the air also, from what I understand.
A lot of grunch in the air. Yeah. There's a lot of grunch on the page as well.
I was so happy you picked this. It was awesome. Like, we got into a little argument when you were I saw the books you were trying to choose from. I'm like, oh, I'm like, give it a shot.
I was very happy when I picked it up.
I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did.
Orkstein, Volume 1. It's out there. You can get it right now.
Yep.
Well, various outlets.
Go read your review on iFanboy.com. Very well written. Very thoughtful. Thought-provoking.
You can check out the art samples I've got up there. It's Stoko. We've also shown Stoko at least once.
He did that Galactus, that insane sketch Galactus sketch. Yeah. Yeah.
He is crazy.
He's crazy. He's awesome. So.
But crazy in a good genius art way.
Yep, totally.
Not in like a serial killer way.
So book of the month. So stay tuned for April for the next book of the month, which is in not far off in 6 and 7 days.
It's not my turn, right?
No, it's my turn. I'm up. So cool. All right, on to the emails. Our first email comes from Greg from Texas, who says, I'm in the middle of the first Cerebus trade, and I'm really enjoying it. The problem is that I'm torn between getting the next 3 volumes of Cerebus or getting the Walt Simonson Thor omnibus. Okay. I'm doing my student teaching this semester and am unable to work, which is why I have this dilemma. Getting them off Amazon, the difference in price is only a couple of bucks. The only Thor book I've ever read is the first Thor of the Mighty Avenger trade, so I don't know much about either the character or Walt Simonson. Which one am I better off getting?
I know you're. I think I know, you're. I know what you're gonna say.
Yeah,
but it's really a more complicated question than that.
No, I don't think so.
Recommending a book to someone who doesn't know anything about
exactly that's the thing. Like it's if it was like, listen, I've got the first Erebus trade, I really liked it. I'm a huge Simonson fan. I'm a big Thor fan. Should I get the omnibus or not? All you've read is Thor the Mighty Avenger. I'm not gonna say you're not gonna like the Walt Simonson Thor. It's different. Simonson is a master. That's one of his best works. It's fantastic. I would encourage anybody to buy that omnibus. But you've already enjoyed the first Erebus trade. Get the next 3 and keep on enjoying it.
It's one of those gifts that keeps giving for a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's gonna get, if you like. It's interesting. It's from what I know is that the first Erebus trade is not even like the right term because it's like a phone. They call it the phone book.
Phone books, yeah.
It's the first 25 issues, and it's got a certain tone, and it's very funny and silly. It's probably actually relatively similar to Orkstein a little bit.
Yeah,
it's a little wacky. It's a little irreverent. But then after that, like the real ongoing plot lines in the biggest sense start up.
Yeah,
and so that's, you know, the problem that you're going to have there is that you're not going to want to stop after 4.
Yeah, exactly, and there's so many more to go from there.
But at the same time,
yeah,
Simon's who can Thor's argue? Great, yeah. You can't argue. Who can Simon's argue? Thor.
Can't.
Yeah.
The problem is if you go from Thor to the Night of the Avenger to Simonson's Thor, the danger is you're going to look at it and say, "Thor is Thor, and this is not Thor."
Yeah.
I know what you were doing there.
It's vastly different from Thor to the Mighty Avenger. That's all I'm saying. It's a big sword and sorcery. Whereas Thor the Mighty Avenger was kind of small and intimate and character-driven, this is a big action-y fantasy Thor.
Cosmic kind of, yeah.
With fantastic art.
Yeah, unbelievable art. But yeah.
I know that Cerebus likes meat, and that meat is meat, and that this
is not meat.
This is not meat. That's all I know.
One of the best panels ever. We used that best week of panels, didn't we?
I'm sure we have.
Great moment, so I did that already. That wasn't for you guys. That was for no one else but you two.
Yeah. That was like number 2.
Let's move on. Vicious Smith writes in and says, I recently picked up the Ex Machina, and the scenes of Mayor 100, the Ex Machina, like I'm in a grandfather.
I know, that's like it's like the indie, the Ex Machina. It's like an indie band.
The internet.
I enjoyed the Ex Machina last night. Really
that's a great band name.
It is, actually.
I recently picked up Ex Machina again, and the scenes of Mayor 100 recalling his rescue efforts during 9/11 still hit me emotionally, even though it's, quote, just a comic book. Even though it's historical fiction. This year will mark the 10 years since the Twin Towers fell. Do you think a comic book involving such touchy subject matter could make it to pilot even a decade in?
I didn't know it was 10 years. Now I'm all bummed out.
It means a TV show?
Yeah, I guess it means a TV show.
They would have. Yes, it could make the pilot because a couple of years ago, there was a pilot about a couple who fell in love after their spouses died in 9/11. I mean, if that can make it.
Yeah, anything can.
Then this can make it the pilot. It's certainly a touchy subject, but anything is possible. There have been a lot of allusions to 9/11, a lot of things in movies and TV shows. Fringe would be a notable one right now. I mean, there's a movie about the World Center falling. Yep. Oliver Stone made. So I mean, this is.
Yeah, there were several movies. I mean, the Paul Greengrass one, and it was referred to during Flash Forward, that train wreck of Flash Forward.
It's certainly not.
I was loaded. Sorry,
that was a bad show.
That was a bad show.
It's certainly touchy. Certainly, I know Vicious lives in New York. For those who do, it's certainly still touchy, especially this year, but. It's certainly not off limits to anyone making anything. It certainly has been used for years.
Yeah, I don't think so. And nothing's off limits, actually. But
is there talk of an Ex Machina on TV?
Not that I know of. What is Brian K. Vaughan doing?
Pilots.
Picking up his mail.
Yeah,
living off that development money.
Yeah, living off those Why the Last Man hardcover sales.
Well, he's working.
Yeah, they'll probably do it.
Yeah,
he's working on some movie that we don't know about. Yeah. Some kind of movie we don't know about.
Oh, it's gonna be awesome. Remember when he was in Wired and he was Yeah. Anyway, so
it's one of those sad things because he is the best of sort of the modern comic book writers, I think.
I don't know about that. I mean, he was at a point potentially to be one of the best, but now he's years out of practice now.
Yeah, but he was, I mean, like the guy did an issue. He did single issue as a form like nobody else.
Yep. No.
And he didn't put out a ton of work, which I think was to his benefit.
He's like Joe DiMaggio.
I don't know what that means, but
he really concentrates when he dips his donut in the coffee.
He does, yeah. Whoop, whoop.
Look, you watch Brett K. Vaughn drink a cup of coffee, eat a donut. He is
that's
focused.
That's the second Dinky Donuts reference we made in like a week. I forgot what it was in Chicago, but we did that with somebody. It was great. Oh, it was at the pizza place. Oh, that was funny. Anyway, okay, so if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Speaking of Chicago, we were in Chicago last week for C2E2. We had a great time. And next week, Connor and I are going to be doing WonderCon because we just can't stop going to cons.
Because we love it.
We love it so much. So go to ifanboy.com where you can see all the information about what's going to be going on WonderCon. There's going to be some awesome, awesome events and things like that you can participate in. And in fact, there's a super rad event going on Friday night where we're going to be doing the Walking Dead zombie bar crawl with our friend Robert Kirkman. So we want to make sure it's very exciting. So we want to make sure that everybody in San Francisco that's going to be in town for WonderCon is going to be available to take part in that. And also, if you've got a couple of bucks to spend and you want to make it even a special night, you can pay $50 or you can buy a ticket to ride the magical magic bus all around San Francisco with us, with James Syme from Isotope, and Robert Kirkman and the Image Comics crew as we go from bar to bar on the bar crawl.
So the rest of the people will be walking, and walking is fine, but if you want to make it extra special, you have some extra cash, you can ride the bus with us from bar to bar.
Exactly.
As opposed to walking or taking a cab.
So tickets will be $50, which with the price of cabs in San Francisco, you end up actually saving money, to be honest.
It's like three bars.
Yeah. And now you get to hang out with Robert Kirkman. There's a very limited number of tickets available. So here's the deal. On Wednesday, we're going to be posting the link to buy tickets. They go on sale 3 p.m. Eastern time, noon Pacific time. Literally, I'm telling you, there's very small number of tickets, like less than 30. So if you were interested in doing this, if you're going to WonderCon, look to ifanboy.com, quarter to three Eastern time. Wait for that link. Good luck buying a ticket. If you can't get a ticket, don't worry. We're going to post the route, and there's going to be a cool map that you can get off ifanboy.com, or you can get at the Image Comics booth on Friday. And also, Image is going to be giving away 2 seats on the bus. So if you're at the con on Friday, you go put your name in for that raffle. Maybe you can win tickets that way. So it's going to be awesome. It's going to be a lot of fun. We hope you can all join us. Our big our annual bar crawl. This is one that's going to be one to remember. And then there's going to be fun stuff going on in the city, in San Francisco on Saturday night, including a party at Isotope, which you're going to want to go to. I don't know if we're announcing it or not, but yeah, you'll stay tuned for that one. So
stay tuned for the next show, which is after WonderCon.
Yeah, exactly.
Stay tuned to ifanboy.com.
Ifanboy.com will be your place to get all the information. So it'll be awesome.
I feel like I can keep up with WonderCon.
WonderCon is amazing. It's a wonder.
Ooh. Yeah, it's.
So go to ifanboy.com. Stay tuned for that. Also go to ifanboy.com where you can listen to our other podcast called iFanboy Don't Miss. It's a podcast where we talk to a creator about a book that's coming out this upcoming Wednesday that you definitely don't want to miss. This week we've got Phil Hester on the show talking about the new Godzilla King of Monsters book that's coming out that him and Eric Powell are doing. So that's going to be a cool one to check out.
That looks fun.
Yeah. So go to ifanboy.com to listen to that or subscribe to it on iTunes. There's still some of you who haven't subscribed to that show. It's only 15 minutes. It's the perfect podcast. Just go get it. So.
Check out ifanboy.com and you can find that you were just talking about, the Don't Miss podcast and all the other podcasts. You can find my written Pick of the Week review. You can find Connor's written Book of the Month review and all the discussion that goes after every one of those things is put on there. Everything is up for debate and up for grabs on iFanboy. And there's new stuff going up all the time. We're really working very hard to make sure that there's a wide variety of stuff that's interesting and things you like. And like we said, there's other podcasts. There's our video show, and you can watch. It's just cons now. That's all.
That's all it is.
All cons all the time.
We just saw Emerald City Part 2. We should be seeing C2E2 Part 1 the next week. In the meantime, Suntress, John Suntress of Word Balloon, has interviews up from C2E2 up already.
That con was very well covered.
It wasn't. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
You're not wrong at all. So plenty of stuff there.
And email us at contact@ifanboy.com, and you can get your email read on the show or maybe in the video show or just amongst ourselves and we will giggle. Also, leave us a voicemail, 888-FANBOYS, 326-2697. We didn't get the voicemails this episode because we had the Book of the Month and it was full, but next week whoever is doing the show with Josh will be doing the voicemails.
Yes, because we sure won't be. So
you just made the call.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty well established. We're going to be in the zombie bar crawl.
Yeah, we're going to be busy. So,
man, what are you guys doing?
Doing a show, Robert.
give me the microphone.
So if you like what you listen to, and I don't know why you do, go to iTunes and write a review. Join the hundreds of fans who've written positive reviews of the iFanboy podcast. Write a review for Don't Miss. Write a review for our video show. Write a review for Tom Verse, the Aquaman. Write a review for 11 O'Clock Comics. Write a review for Word Balloon. Write reviews in iTunes. It's a fun way to get the word out about the podcast. Tell your friends. Tell your comic book store. Tell anyone who's into comics. Or even people who aren't into comics. There's tons of people who listen to the show who have no interest in comics but find us amusing.
For whatever reason. I'm going to tell the bus driver.
Yeah.
He's going to love me.
So help us spread
the
iFanboy word.
Get behind the yellow line. Sorry, sir.
Help us spread the iFanboy word. It's definitely – we need your help in doing that. The Legion, the loyal iFanbase Legion, we thank you for that. So, well, I'm still a little wonky after Chicago, and I need to rest up before San Francisco because clearly it's going to be an exhausting one. So, and then April 4th, I will die. So – three cons, 5 weeks.
I've already decided I'm going to take the week after WonderCon and sleep.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm turning off my alarm. Yep. Josh can run the website.
Yep.
Sleep.
So.
All right, so hopefully we'll see you all in San Francisco WonderCon. If you're at the show, come by, say hello. And hopefully we'll see you on the bar crawl and the Walking Dead. Also, dress up like zombies. We're encouraging people to zombify for it. It's going to be awesome when we roll into a bar with hundreds of zombies. So.
Somebody will pull a gun. Oh my god, it's finally happened.
And no one will know who's been hit.
Yeah, exactly.
And Ron and I will just look like our normal selves because we'll be really tired.
Yep, exactly. So, okay, so until next time, I'm Ron.
And what I'm saying is Baroness would be into a Dr. Peter Venkman, Captain James T. Kirk three-way.
That's crazy.
She would.
I think Kirk would. I think Kirk would be all threatened by Peter Venkman's machismo. And then he would challenge him to a duel.
The Chicago Charm?
A shirtless duel. That's all I was going for.
Yep. So.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Sorry. Were we doing that? Are we finishing it?
We're done.
Bye-bye.